Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a huge shout out and thank you to the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So huge rounds of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S, Frugal Brutal, Jenna the Filthy MTG Casuals, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And again, you can pick up your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That's INKEDgaming.com. Got two really awesome versions, both the full color logo as well as the grayscale version. They both look amazing. You're going to want one for you and all of your friends for this holiday season. So again, you go over to inkedgaming.com. That's INKEDgaming.com. Search MTG in Quarantine. Every purchase helps support the channel. I hope you use the affiliate link I'll provide in the show notes below. Every purchase helps support the channel and it's greatly appreciated. Today's episode of the podcast is the next one in the cycle of non-basic land reviews. Obviously, I've been doing this in Wooburg order, and it is time to talk about the mightiest of all colors, or at least in their own words, red. So again, I'm going to just be talking about all the non-basic lands that provide you with, well, hopefully colored mana, hopefully a red mana. Some of these will include colorless, but again, mostly they will provide you red mana when tapped. Now, again, I do have a couple of restrictions for this. First and foremost, I will not be talking about online-only cards because, again, I don't play online Magic, so I only know the paper games, so it doesn't really make sense for me to talk about cards I don't know. And also, I'm going to be skipping ones that tap for either red or another mana of a chosen color. Again, those kinds of cards don't really make sense in this review, so I'm going to be skipping right over them. Anyway, without further ado, I would like to get started with a modal dual phase card from Zendikar Rising that seems like a topic on this series, and that is Akum Warriors / Akum Teeth. Akum Teeth enters the battlefield tapped, tapped dead red, and Akum Warriors are 4 or 5 Minotaur Warrior costing 5 in a red, and it just has trample. So, again, you know, a 4 or 5 with trample for 6 mana is not necessarily the best rate, but again, hey, you know, a 4 or 5 trampler, especially in mono red, ain't bad. If you can find ways to be able to boost this, and red has a lot of ways to be able to boost this, having trample printed right on the card is real nice. Yes, and yes, it costs 6 mana, but again, you're playing this because you want to have the land on the other side. So, you know, not a terrible card action. You can pick it up for about 4 cents if you're interested. So definitely look into that. Next card is Balduvian Trading Post, which is a cycle of card out of Alliances, part of the reserved list. So this is actually one of the cheaper cards in this cycle. So if Balduvian Trading Post enter the battlefield, sacrifice an untapped mountain instead. If you do, put Balduvian Trading Post onto the battlefield. If you don't, put it into its owner's graveyard. You can tap and add a colorless and a red, or you can pay one and tap it, and Balduvian Trading Post deals 1 damage to target attacking creature. So yes, we've talked about this cycle in particular on other episodes. Obviously, Balduvian Trading Post is probably not as great as the other ones in this cycle. But again, the fact that it can allow you to deal damage to a target attacking creature is kind of nice. Probably not as great in EDH as it was in the limited environment. But again, you know, if you can find a good home for this, it's less than $5. So again, kind of an interesting land. Nice little effect there, just maybe not the most usable nowadays, but again, I can definitely see some corner cases where this would be really nice. So that's Balduvian Trading Post. Moving on, we have the card that is part of a cycle from Odyssey. That was Barbarian Rings. So each one of the lands in the cycle tap to add 1 color of their respective mana to your mana pool, and then deal 1 damage to you, and they all have thresholds. So you pay red, you tap it, you sacrifice Barbarian Ring to deal 2 damage to target creature or player. There's a reason why Barbarian Ring is actually CEDH playable, because you never know when dealing 2 damage to target creature or player can actually really help, especially when it's something that really cannot be easily interacted with. I know I talked about this a lot when I did my non-basic land review on black, and Barbarian Ring really fits under that, is the fact that you can use this basically as a shock is really nice. Obviously, you need to have threshold and only does 2 damage, but the ability to be able to do that without having to utilize a spell slot is pretty nice. Next on, we're going to move up to Blighted Gorge, which you can tap to add colorless to your mana pool, or you can pay 4 in a red and tap and sack it to deal 2 damage to our creature player. So again, it's just a nice effect to have in there if you don't want to play Barbarian Ring. Also the fact that it doesn't hurt you to play it, and you don't need Threshold, but it does cost 6 mana for a shock. So I mean, it really kind of depends on if you think you're going to have Threshold, or if you just want to make sure that you can have that ability on a land, period. I think that's going to be the big deciding factor between playing Barbarian Ring and Blighted Gorge. Next up was the red entry from Throne of Eldraine, the Cycle of Lands, and that is Castle Emberith, which was the pre-release card when I played Throne of Eldraine sealed way back in what seems like a million years ago, end of 2019 there. Yeah, it was, God, it's been so long ago. But anyway, Castle Emberith enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a mountain. You can tap to add red, or you can have another activated ability where you pay 1 red, tap it, and creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. If you're playing mono red, it probably comes untapped. It taps for red on itself, so there's really no opportunity cost. And the fact that you can give your creatures a buff, while it is expensive, the fact that you can give your creatures a buff of +1/+0 is never to be underestimated. I've always really wanted to find a home for this card. And it really, I mean, it does everything you want in a red land. So I really love this card. It's a couple of bucks if you want to pick one up. And I highly recommend it, honestly. Moving on, we have Den of the Bugbear. This is a cycle of lands, came out of Avengers in the Forgotten Realms that pretty much have all done really well and all are fairly expensive. Comes in about $5. And if you control 2 or more other lands, it comes about enters the battlefield tapped, excuse me. Tap to add a red, or you can pay 3 in a red until end of turn. Den of the Bugbear becomes a 3/2 red goblin creature with, whenever this creature attacks, create a 1/1 red goblin creature token that's tapped and attacking. It's still a land. Obviously, goblins that multiply themselves with tapped and attacking goblins are really nice, and the fact that you can do this on a land makes a really good man land. Yes, it's probably going to come in tapped most of the time, but again, it's nice to be able to pay 4 mana to be able to get 2 bodies that equal a 4/3. So, you know, not a bad thing. Goblin is a very fine creature type, a very common creature type. So if you have any goblin synergies, this doesn't hurt at all. So it's you can definitely start seeing why it has a $5 price tag. Moving on, we have Desert of the Fervent, which is the desert cycle of cards out of Hour of Devastation. They all enter a battlefield tap. They tap to add 1 color of their respective color to your mana pool, and they have cycling for 1 and that color. So you can discard the card and draw a card. Kind of nice way to be able to deal with mana flooding later in the game. Next up, we have the red entry in the Vision Cycle of Lands, and that is Dormant Volcano. Enters battlefield tapped, and when it enters battlefield, sacrifice it unless you return untapped mountain you control its owner's hand, and you tap to add colorless and red to your mana pool. Fairly straightforward. We've been talking about these for this whole series. Not much to say on that one. Gonna skip Dwarven Hold because that involves storage counters. Moving on to Dwarven Ruins. Comes to play tap to add red to your mana pool. You tap sacrifice to add double red to your mana pool. Real simple, the Crystal Vein effect, except for the fact it comes to play tapped, so it's not quite as good as Crystal Vein, but again, if you need red mana, hey, not the worst thing. Next card we have is out of Commander 2014, interestingly enough, and that is Flamekin Village. When Flamekin Village enters the battlefield, you may reveal an elemental card from your hand. If you don't, Flamekin Village enters the battlefield tapped. Tap to add a red, and you can pay red and tap it to give target creature haste until end of turn. If you're playing elementals, this is a really good card, but even if you're not, the ability to have a land that gives your creatures haste, or at least one of your creatures haste until end of turn, is a really good ability. It's the reason why this card's a couple bucks, because haste is always really nice, especially if you can get a nice big beater out on the battlefield. Pay 2 mana, give it haste, and there you go. Next up is Forgotten Cave. And again, this is the cycle of lands that cycle themselves away for 1 mana of the type that they produce. You discard a card, draw a card. These are the kind of cards where I always love throwing 1 into a deck just so that if I do end up drawing later in the game and I don't need it, I can throw it away and draw a card. So I just love having these things, especially monocolored decks. Let's skip Gate to Tumbledown because it is a online-only card. So we go to Gitu Encampment. And Gitu Encampment was originally printed in Urza's Legacy. And it's battlefield tap to add red to your mana pool. And if you pay 1 in a red, it's a man land. It becomes a 2/1 red warrior creature with first strike until end of turn. It's still a land. Again, it's a man land. It's nice to be able to have that ability to be able to pay 2 mana, be able to get a creature out of it. That's also a land, so just some really nice value there. Next up is Goblin Burrows. It's a land tap to add one colorless to your mana pool, but if you pay one and a red and tap it, target goblin creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. Again, three mana, give one target goblin +2/+0 might not seem powerful, but again, goblins are a very resilient creature type. You never know when this will help. So if you're playing Goblin deck, maybe you should look into running Goblin Burrows. Next up is Great Furnace, which is the artifact land out of the Mirrodin block, where it just taps to add one red to your mana pool as an artifact, so in addition to a land, so not much to say there. There's a reason why all of these are banned in Modern. Moving on to Hammerheim, which is a land straight out of Legends. So there was this whole cycle of these, and this is the red entry here. You tap to add red to your mana pool, or you can tap to force target creature to lose all landwalk abilities until end of turn. We don't really see a lot of landwalk abilities these days, but if you do somehow run into one, run Hammerheim. It's $25, but again, it's a real nice flex to have one of these in your deck. And if someone is running some weird landwalk ability, it's nice to be able to shut that off till end of turn. I really don't want to talk about Unweird Battlements because it doesn't provide red mana. But again, it's a melding card out of Eldritch Moon where you can meld it to turn into the Writhing Township, which does other things. So it provides, allows you to give target creature haste until end of turn. You can also tap for colorless mana. So it does some things, but it doesn't tap for red. The next card up on here is Hellion Crucible, which I've never actually seen this card. So you tap and add one of your mana pool. It can pay one and a red, tap to put a pressure counter on it. You pay one to red, tap and remove two pressure counters from Hellion Crucible and sacrifice and put a 4/4 red Hellion creature token with haste on the battlefield. Oh, okay. Requires a little bit of investment, but I guess you can get a 4/4 creature token with haste on the battlefield. So that's interesting. Next up we have here is another modal dual face card from Zendikar Rising. That's Kazul's Fury. This card I actually do run in a couple of decks. Kazul's Cliff Center's battlefield tap, but you can also, it gives you a nice little fling effect for 3 mana to deal damage equal to sacrifice creature's power to any target. So again, having a land on one side and a fling ability on the other side ain't bad. Next up is Keldon Megaliths. Enter battlefield tap, tap dead red in your mana pool, and if you're hellbent, so if you have no cards in your hand, you can pay one in a red and tap and it'll deal one damage to target creature or player. So if you're going to be running out of cards in your hand, you can, for 3 mana, hit someone for 1. Not the worst thing. Next up we have is Keldon Necropolis. It's a legendary land. Tap to add 1 to your mana pool. You can pay 4 and a red and tap it and sacrifice a creature to deal 2 damage to target creature or player. Well, I mean, we already saw this with Blighted Gorge. Of course, the fact is you have to sacrifice Blighted Gorge. So I think that's the difference, is that the Necropolis forces you to sacrifice a creature, not itself. So I think that the recur ability to be able to do that is really nice, though it does cost 6 mana, so, you know, it's pretty expensive for that sort of effect, just to shock someone. Next up, we have Care Keep, which is a legendary land, originally printed in Time Spiral. Tap to add a colorless, or you can pay 1 and a red, tap and create a 0/1 red kobold creature token named Kobolds of Care Keep. Again, a really nice way to be able to deal with mana flood later on in the game, to be able to turn those into 0/1 kobold tokens. Not the worst thing. Next up we have Looming Spires. Looming Spires enters the battlefield. Tap to an enters the battlefield. Target creature gets +1/+1 and gains first strike until end of turn. Tap to add red to your mana pool. I really love these lands that do this sort of effect because, yes, while they do come in tapped, they do give you a relevant ability when they come into play. So I really like this card and the things that it can do, and I know there's another one on here that we'll be talking about here in a few moments that we'll be doing something similar. And the reason why I think that these honestly should be played in CDH, or not CDH, but be played in EDH more, is giving a creature +1/+1 first strike, you know, could make all the difference in combat for a turn. So I just really like the utility of these cards. Next up we have Memorial to War, which is originally printed in Dominaria. It enters the battlefield tap, tapped out of red. You can pay 4 and a red and tap and sacrifice Memorial to War to destroy target land. You're probably not going to want to do that, but again, if you want extra land destruction, it's nice to have that on a land. Next up, we have Mercadian Bazaar. I'm going to skip that because storage counters. Now we have Ramunap Ruins, which again was a very, very popular card in 60 card constructed when it came out in Hour of Devastation. Not so much anymore. what at the time was extremely, extremely powerful, and I believe even had a entire deck archetype built around it. So Ramunap Ruins, you can tap to add colorless to your mana pool, you can tap to pay one life to add red to your mana pool, or you can pay two colorless, red, tap it, sacrifice a desert, deal two damage to each opponent. So again, you remember when I was talking about that the Desert of the Fervent? Well, this is the reason why Ramunap Ruins really worked, was the fact that you could run a bunch of deserts in your deck, then sacrifice either of those deserts or itself to deal two damage to each opponent. So it was a nice way to be able to finish off your opponents in a mono-red deck. So maybe not the most usable nowadays, but again, at the time, this is a very powerful card. Next up, we have Ravaged Highlands. Another cycle of lands that taps rather red. Comes into play tapped. You can tap and sacrifice to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. There's a whole cycle of these. Really not much to talk about. Sandstone Needle was the cycle of lands out of Mercanium Masks where they came with two depletion counters on them and they would create two mana for each depletion counter removed. Moving on to Shatter Skull Smashing out of Zendikar Rising Mode Dual Face card. It's Shatter Skull the Hammer Pass on one side where you either comes in play tapped unless you pay three life, or it comes in as Shatter Skull Smashing, which is a sorcery costing X red. It's Shatter Skull Smashing, that's hard to say. Deals X damage divide as you choose among up to two creature target creatures and or planeswalkers. If X is six or more, Shatter Skull Smashing deals twice X damage divide as you choose among them instead. So nice little mana sink later on the game to deal with some problematic things on the board, especially planeswalkers, really nice to be able to hit those, but also if you just really need to kill creatures, it's nice. And there's a reason why this card is actually over $6, is that it's actually really, really good, and the fact that it can come into play untapped for, honestly, nominal amount of life is really nice. So, yeah, it's a very good card. Moving on, we have Shinka, the Bloodsoaked Keep. This is the cycle of legendary lands out of Champions of Kamigawa. Tap to add red to your mana pool, or you can pay red and tap and target legendary creature gains first strike until end of turn. Like I said with my review on the mono white lands, I think first strike is actually really slept on as an ability. Maybe not so much as vigilance, but first strike, I think, honestly, people get bored with it and they say it's not that good, but I honestly think first strike is an amazing ability because the ability to protect your creature in combat potentially is really nice and cannot be understated. So the ability to give, let's say, your commander first strike till end of turn for just two mana is really nice. Next up, we have Shivan Gorge, which is a legendary land out of Urza's Saga. I actually do have a copy of this in my bulk bin. And you can tap to add colorless, or you can pay two red and tap it, and it deals one damage to each opponent. Again, four mana to hit everyone for one. It's expensive, but I guess in the right build, you can find the right way to do this. You can deal the last point of damage. Nice thing to have on land. Smoldering Crater, again, has a battlefield tap. Tap to add a red, cycling for two, colorless. Smoldering Spires. Again, it's one of the red lands that gives you an ability when it enters the battlefield. Enters the battlefield tapped, and when it enters the battlefield, target creature can't block this turn. So probably more useful and limited, but again, in EDH, also not the worst thing either. Next up, we have the new lands, the channel lands from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, and that's the Kenzan Crucible of Defiance. I actually did pull the borderless version of this in one of my packs in the pre-release, I believe. And then you can tap to add red, and you have channel ability costing three red and discarding Sekenzin, Crucible of Defiance, to create two 1-1 colorless spirit creature tokens. They gain haste until end of turn. This ability costs one less to activate for each legendary creature you control. Really nice to be able to create a couple of tokens if you need them. And also have a land that taps for red. So, I mean, there's really no opportunity cost here unless you get Blood Moon. But, you know, that's a whole other thing. The point is, it's really nice to be able to have this to be able to tap for red if you need it, or if you need to discard it to be able to get a couple of bodies with haste on the battlefield, that ain't bad. Moving on next, we have another modal dual face card from Zendikar Rising. Stop me if you've heard this one before, and that is Song Mad Treachery / Song Mad Ruins. Enter battlefield tapped on the land side, and the sorcery's side is a treachery effect where you gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap that creature, gains haste until end of turn for 5 mana. So probably a little bit expensive for this sort of effect, but again, it's a land on the other side, so you probably don't worry about it. Next one is another modal dual-faced card from Zendikar Rising, and that's Spikefield Hazard and Spikefield Cave. And it's battlefield tapped on the land side, and then a deal on the other side. It's a one mana instant, deals one damage to any target, and permanent with dealt damage. So we have die this turn, exile it instead. One damage is probably not going to do much in the constructed format, so this is more of a limited card, but again, one mana, one damage, ability to exile something, not the worst thing in the world. Next up, we have the Hideaway land, which is Spine Rock Knoll. So Hideaway 4, when this land enters the battlefield, look at the top 4 cards of your library, exile one face down, then put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. As battlefield tapped, tapped out a red, and you can pay red and tap it. You may play that exiled card without paying its mana cost, and the opponent was dealt 7 or more damage this turn. If you're playing mono red especially, probably not all that difficult. Nice to be able to play a card pretty much for free, just by doing the thing you're going to be doing anyway. So not a terrible card. Definitely something you should look into if you want to be able to play stuff pretty much for free out of exile. Now, the card that actually I know a lot of people out there who played limited, played 60-card Constructor really enjoyed is Teetering Peaks. This is something that I actually do run at least one of my decks. Enters the battlefield, tap dead red, to your mana pool, but when enters the battlefield, target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. I think +2 is actually a really nice buff, especially in CDH where, why do I keep saying CDH for everything? For EDH, because you never know when giving a creature +2 can actually really help. So the fact that you can do that on a land and not have to take up a land slot and then be able to tap this for mana later on, you know, is not to be underestimated, honestly. I really like Teetering Peaks. I know it's only 10 cents now for Zendikar from the original Zendikar printing, but again, really cool card. Definitely something that was very playable back in Standard back in the day, and I think is still playable in EDH today. Next up, we have another very popular card, and that is Valakut Awakening / Valakut Stoneforge. So Valakut Stoneforge enters battlefield tapped. Valakut Awakening is an instant costing 2 and a red, and you put any number of cards from your hand on the bottom of your library, then draw that many cards +1. Very good ability. If you throw away 3 cards, you get 4 for 3 mana. It's a land on the other side. There's just really no downside to playing this kind of card. It's just really good. Doesn't force you to discard, you just put things on the bottom of your deck and you can draw, and honestly, it scales really nicely. Even if you get rid of one card, you still draw two. And the fact that it's at instant speed is real nice. Next up, and pretty much last, we're going to talk about Valakut the Molten Pinnacle. Valakut is a very, very, very good land that was good in its own day back in Construct, and still very good in EDH today. So, and it's not legendary, so remember that, because that's definitely hit me multiple times. So it enters the battlefield tapped, and whenever a mountain enters the battlefield under your control, if you control at least 5 other mountains, you may have Valakut the Molten Pinnacle deal 3 damage to target creature or player. This is gross in Landfall. Lord Windgrace loves this sort of deck. Any kind of Landfall deck that's running a lot of mountains really loves this card. The ability to shoot things for 3, for basically lightning bolt something just for having a mountain coming into play is really nice. And the fact you can copy this is really cool, because it's not legendary, so you can copy it. You can use Vesuva, Thespian Stage, any kind of land copying ability you can do with this. So, I mean, it's a pretty good card for a reason, and that's why it's expensive. So, yeah, very good card, something I vouch for highly. And what the heck, I'll talk about this last card on this list, and that's Vance's Blasting Cannon / Spitfire Bastion. Blasting Cannon, at the beginning, it's an enchantment for costing 3 and red. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. If it's an online card, you may cast that card's turn. Whenever you cast your third spell in a turn, you may transform Vance's Blasting Cannon turns into Spitfire Bastion. Tap dead red to your mana pool, and you can pay 2 red and tap it to deal 3 damage to a creature or player. Again, if you're playing Mono Red Storm, if you're playing Captain Lannery Storm Effect especially, this actually works really well with that. And then you can tap it, get a land, and also be able to Lightning Bolt something for 4 mana. So, again, just a nice little payoff, as well as being able to exile a top card library beforehand. So, a nice little bit of value on this card. It's super cheap to pick it up if you want to pick up the original Exelon copy. So, yeah, you know, it's nice little impulse draw, kind of older impulse draw for red, and has some nice value. So ultimately, I feel like these mono red lands don't have anywhere near as much value stapled onto them as some of the other lands in the cycle, or some of the other colors in the cycle, but I really enjoy Teetering Peaks. So Kenzan Crucible of Defiance is really cool. The ability to cause damage to a player or a creature with a lot of these cards is really nice. It definitely fits in with the red theme. Castle Embereth is nice because you can give all your creatures a nice little buff until end of turn. I feel like there's definitely some Barbarian Ring here. You can deal damage to target creature or player. So there's a lot of value here. I think it's just a little bit harder to be able to get that value out of the lands versus the other colors. But again, if you're playing mono red, and you just kind of need a utility land or two just to give yourself some extra generic value. I think red really has those kinds of abilities, especially for aggressive decks. Like, again, with Teetering Peaks, like with Looming Spires, I think that these cards give you a nice little boost. And then the ability to be able to have a fling on a land is always nice. So, yeah, that's Mono Red. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope you listened to the last episode in the cycle on Mono Green Utility Lands when I do get that out there. So anyway, if you're interested in listening to any of the other episodes I've done the cycle, or just any of the MTG and Quarantine podcasts in general, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That's your Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocketcast, Podcast, Overcast, Breaker, and a million others. I never remember all of them, but it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find my stuff on there. You can also find me on Twitter at MTGNQuarantine. I'd like to utilize this opportunity to give another huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGNQuarantine. It's a huge round of thank yous again to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, and Coach J-Row for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGNQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoy listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.